Hello, everyone, and welcome to another episode of the Detroit Lions Breakdown Podcast. I'm Joe Kenya. With me, as always, is Eric Schlitt from PrideOfDetroit.com. Eric, the Lions pummeled the Tennessee Titans this past Sunday, 52-14. Outgained all offensively, you know, but everybody who's listening watched the game and saw that sometimes the numbers don't matter. And when you have all these monster returns, like you are going to be outgained by the other team and you're going to still throttle them. One of the better Lions performances I've ever seen. And they're rolling, right?
Yeah,
and
certainly.
They're rolling into this Sunday's game in Lambeau Field against the Green Bay Packers. No better time to be hot.
It'll be interesting because you talk about numbers not lying. We had talked about on the podcast that Tennessee had the number one yardage allowed in the NFL. Like they were the best at holding teams to such low yardage. And we tried to warn everybody that's because they just are setting up opponents a really short field position. And then sure enough, man, that played out exactly.
Happened.
Yeah. Over and over and over. Yeah, it's a big game. Big game this upcoming one. Another divisional road game against, well, I mean, you can debate between Minnesota and Green Bay and tell me which one that you think is the harder opponent, but this should be equally as hard as the game they had 2 weeks ago. And it could be a close game, maybe a little bit higher scoring, but it should be a very exciting game. It should be, you know, it should be one that comes down to the fourth quarter, maybe even the second half of the fourth quarter.
Yeah, at this point, Green Bay is now the more dangerous team than Minnesota. At the time, sure, when the Lions played Minnesota, Minnesota was the more dangerous team. Minnesota was 5-0. Lions were, you know, a game behind. And if they would have lost that game, they would have been putting themselves in a big hole. To Minnesota. Now, same type of issue exists with the Packers. Lions 6-1, five winners of five in a row. Packers 6-2, winners of four in a row. Packers win this Sunday, they'd go to 7-2. Lions would fall to 6-2. All of a sudden, the Packers have basically a game and a half lead in the division, half game in real terms, and a game simply from having a win over the Lions, right? So it's similar situation as two weeks ago in Minnesota, except for the Lions aren't chasing; they're being the chased.
Right. If you can take this game home with a win, if you can leave with a win, it's such a huge advantage when it comes to having to face both Minnesota and then the Packers down the road. Right, like, it gives you a little bit of wiggle room to make mistakes. It allows you, it just gives you some comfort. And it's one of their most important games left on their schedule. And I know that's kind of weird to say because you've still got 10 games remaining, but of the 10 games remaining, it's easily a top five most important game and maybe even a top three most important game. You know, you have some tough opponents on the schedule, like, you know, the Bills and the Texans and the Vikings again, of course, and the Packers again, of course, but 49ers. Yeah. In San Fran. So those are all tough games, but you know, from a seeding standpoint, from a divisional standpoint, this is going to be extraordinarily challenging because there's such a big impact. Like you said, it goes beyond just getting a physical half game advantage or a game and a half advantage, but it gives you that leverage to have the win in hand as well. So yeah, very important game. I really think the Lions will be focused for this based on the transactions that they have and have not made. It sure looks like they're going to kind of go in with the roster they have. Maybe they make a trade, but if they do at this point, it's going to be really hard to get a guy up to speed in time. So,
I don't know. Sorry.
Go ahead. No, go ahead.
Look at the defensive end, Muhammad, that played on Sunday. He led all defensive linemen in snaps.
No, right.
Didn't take that long to get him up to speed.
Well, it's, I mean, it took a couple, like a couple of weeks, right? It's not a couple as
Right.
opposed to a couple of days. So,
Lions got a couple of weeks though after the trade deadline. That's the fifth.
But I mean, for this game, it's going to be hard to get them warmed
Oh,
up this
well, yeah,
game.
no, I'm sorry. I didn't know you were mentioning specifically this game. Yeah,
Yeah.
there's nothing the
Yeah.
Lions can do
Specific.
that'll do anything for them on Sunday. Correct.
Right. So any trade they're making, you're really looking at it from, I think, a long-term perspective, right? You're looking at it as, let's get them up to speed. You know, maybe if we make a trade in the next day or so, we can get them up to speed before Houston, but even that might be a little bit challenging. So, you know, you're kind of, maybe your next big game is what, like Thanksgiving, right? So, I know the trade talk is what everyone wants to talk about and what everyone is interested in. Unfortunately, there's just the Lions are taking their time with it, and I totally get it. They're probably looking to push prices down. And then but at the same time, I think the fans are getting a little squirrely trying to you know, see what's actually going to happen, what the fallout of it is going to be.
Yeah, well, everybody wants to see something happen. Even you and I want to see something
Sure,
happen
sure.
because we saw it again on Sunday. Although that shouldn't say again, the Lions did have four sacks against the Vikings, but was it only one against the Texans? Mason Rudolph was able to throw under very little duress all day, and thankfully he was Mason Rudolph, and that's somebody who was good.
Yeah, I didn't look at the numbers ahead of time. But you know, I was surprised that they were able to get their pressures off the edge as opposed to interior. I was expecting more interior pressure, but it was Muhammad and Levi who were the ones who ended up, I think, getting like five and six collectively or something like that. But we'll break down the Titans game in a minute. Let's just shift to our normal procedure here and start talking about what transactions they did make.
All right. First off, Christian Mahogany was removed from the non-football injury list, added to the 53-man roster. So a little surprising to you and I. I don't know, maybe not. But I was feeling when we were talking about this last week, we were leaning more towards him going on the end of the season IR.
You know, I talk, when you listen to Dan talk, he was kind of hinting that he would have liked to have made it happen to bring him on the 53, but they have 11 offensive linemen right now, which is quite a bit. Last year, you know, they kept nine, I think, if I'm not mistaken, and so they feel like they have the space for it right now. And as things move along throughout the season, if they need to add you know, players back from injured reserve, if they make a trade, they may need to you know, reassess how many guys they need on the offensive line. But you know, Mahogany's done enough to impress that they want to keep him on the roster, keep developing him, and you know, see how far along he can go. So it's interesting, you know, you got two developmental offensive linemen that probably are going to be inactive on game days. And but at the same time, the Lions have left an open spot on the roster pretty much all season because they feel like they have the talent to you know, to make things work, and they're not worried about, you know, those last couple of spots. They like the flexibility, and if they use them on developmental guys, all the better.
Speaking out about one of those last couple slots, we got defensive tackle Broderick Martin begins his 21-day evaluation clock.
So the hopes here is that, you know, he can basically replace the production that the Lions lost from Kyle Pecco going on injured reserve, right? I felt like the run defense has been a little bit more lacking since Pecco left. Part of its rotation, maybe part of its maybe putting a little bit extra snaps and pressure on the starters, and they could use some a little bit of relief. And Broderick would bring that. And so when he'll come back is anyone's guess. Could be, you know, remember, he can come back at any point during the 21 day. If they decide he's ready to go for Sunday, they could bring him back for Sunday if they wanted. But they can bring him back at any point during the 21 day, and then when that will be, I'm not sure. But he's a guy I expect them to return and not like put back on IR. I don't think that's really something that they would consider with him at this stage. It's a piece that they need. So let's see how quickly they can get him going. It should be a fun addition when he's ready.
158 yards rushing for the Titans on Sunday. So concerning, you know, they still have not relinquished a 100 yard rusher, but 158 yards is a lot, especially for this group that's over the last couple of years, actually last 2.5 years, been rather stout against the run. All right. Let's talk about the injury report. Now, if everybody's listening on Thursday, we're recording this on Wednesday, which is a day off from what we usually do, usually record on Thursdays. But with Thursday being Halloween, we're going to take that day off and we're getting it out of the way early. So we talk about the injury report. We won't be talking about guys who missed practice Thursday, obviously, because it's only Wednesday for us. So resting on Wednesdays, Frank Ragnow, Graham Glasgow, Kevin Zeitler, Levi Onwuzurike, and DJ Reader.
So expectation is based on how they operated last week was all the veterans that get Wednesday off return to practice on Thursday and Friday, and then they're all good to go, refreshed and energized for the game on Sunday. Expect that to be the case again with all five of those guys this week as well.
Quarterback Jared Goff, ankle injury, did not practice Wednesday. Really no surprise to hear about that today. Expected to return to practice on Thursday. Now that, you know, we'll probably end up talking a little bit more about this, but I complained to you during the game that they needed to get him out sooner than what they ended up doing. Because he could keep playing, you know, he hurt his ankle, he could keep playing, but sometimes it's the next day the ankle blows up on you. I don't know if that's the situation here.
No, it's not. He said he felt completely fine. He could have practiced, but like the other, this is more of a, he probably could have been included in the veterans rest category, but because he actually did have an ankle issue, they list it that way. He's expected to return to practice on Thursday and expected to be good to go.
I don't know. See, I could go either way. Like, what's the point of him even practicing on Thursday? But at the same time, he doesn't get hit in practice, although something weird could happen where, you know, a couple guys get knocked over and can roll into him or whatever.
Sure.
You know, that could always happen, even though you're not supposed to hit him. Mm-hmm. All right. Left tackle, Taylor Decker, chest injury, did not practice Wednesday.
Again, I think this is like along the lines of Goff, where he's got something that's bothering him, but they're giving him a day off from a precautionary standpoint. So I'm not overly worried about Decker either. This is, I think from Decker, Goff, and the other five, those are all guys getting rest for an important game.
Now, I was worried about Decker right after the first play of the game on Sunday when he just let Arden Key blow right by him for a sack. And I was reading, you know, an article about him it might have been that morning, you know, Sunday morning, about him talking about like how you can get down on yourself when you play a bad game, but you got to keep in perspective that you're good enough to be there and blah, blah, blah. And I'm like, oh my God, he was like calling that he was going to have a bad game in this interview he was giving. And it wasn't that bad. That was that first play with that, you ruin the whole getting the ball first, because, you know, put him in a bad position and second and long, and then they had to go, then they went three and out, and we all know what happened from there. It turned out just fine.
Yeah, I think there's a lot of people that are really down on Decker right now, and that play certainly didn't help his cause, but I think he's been better than what people give him credit for. There have been some lapses here and there, but he's still a really good player. And I think we can take a breath a little bit and just be okay with him playing the way he is, because even if he is in a little bit of a lull, I have no doubts he's going to return to form and be his above average self.
Rookie running back Sione Vaki, knee injury, did not practice Wednesday.
So I don't know when he hurt himself, because he played into the fourth quarter, even was
played on offense.
Yeah, for an offensive play. He had a lot of special teams. So he had forced that fumble on special teams, which was really great. Yeah. Highest graded special teams player for the Lions. Now,
man, Khalif, what did Khalif Raymond do wrong?
Khalif for punt returns, he was like at a 92 or something like that, and Vaki was at like a 91 overall. So that just shows you how like important of a player he was on special teams. But he wasn't available in the locker room after, and that's usually an indicator that maybe something happened during the game, not, you know, a fallout after. He was at practice, but not participating in the practice itself. He was running on, cycling on one of the stationary bikes with trainers, and we'll have to see how it goes. It could be he returns to practice tomorrow. Could mean he needs a day, a couple more days, or maybe misses the week. We'll have to find out more. But he had a really good game. It'd be nice to get him back out there, because his contributions, they really do go beyond just an offensive snap here and there.
Defensive lineman Josh Pascal, an illness, did not practice Wednesday.
So the story broke about what the illness is after we recorded our last podcast. And essentially, he had something that was flagged during one of his routine checkups. Now, many of you will recall in 2018, Pascal had cancer, and he missed the 2018 season at Kentucky because of it. He has, as most cancer patients who have put cancer in remission have, annual checkups that they have to go to. And during one of his annual checkups, they flagged something that they didn't like. It's not cancer. It hasn't returned or anything like that. But it was a marker or something like that, that they didn't like where it was at. And they want him to focus on his health and fixing that undisclosed error that they don't like, essentially. So that's what he's doing. He's focusing back on his personal health and trying to get back to a point where he can be cleared to play again. And they expect it to be soon, but they don't have a definitive date. He's taking it day by day. It could be he returns tomorrow. We could mean he misses another week. It's kind of up in the air, because this is considered an illness because it's a non-football injury. Any non-football injuries or any non-football issues like this are all fall under the illness category. So you just got to hope he takes care of what he needs to and gets back to his full health and gets cleared, and hopefully he'll be back soon. But for the time being, they're not going to play him until he gets that corrected.
All right, linebacker Malcolm Rodriguez, ankle injury, did not practice Wednesday. Expected to miss the game and to return in Week 10.
So he got injured on the third special teams play of the day, and he was on the sideline and they had him in a blue tent, and then all of a sudden he's on a cart and we didn't even realize it. We didn't even realize he was hurt, because he didn't like go down on the field. He managed to get off the field, managed to get to the trainers. And then, we just happened to look down and there he was. So I didn't actually see where he got injured, but it's apparently a re-aggravation of a pre-existing ankle injury and not a new one. So, because it's not a new one, it's a much shorter recovery timeline, right? Like, it's not like he has a new tear or something like that where he has to, like, it has to, take its time to heal. This is just he's already done a lot of the healing process. It's just a re-aggravation, probably take a week, and then, they'll get him back soon.
All right. It's time to talk about reviewing the Titans game. So first off, kind of mentioned it already, Lions score 52, but Jared Goff only throws for 85 yards in the process. Lions averaging over 40 points per game over the last four games.
Yeah, and over 31 points over the last over the season. It's I think they're number one right now. I believe they hopped the Ravens, if I'm not mistaken. And they just look like a juggernaut right now. As Bill Belichick told Jared Goff this week, defenses don't really have an answer for what the Lions want to do, because if you want to play them physical, they can play you physical. If you want to finesse them, they can finesse you. If you want to blitz them, they can, Lions can handle the blitz. If you don't blitz them, Lions will carve you up. Like, there's, they're playing at a level right now that there's not, there's really not many answers for stopping them. And it's awfully fun to watch, awfully impressive to watch. The Vikings have the number one defense in the NFL by a long shot. And, you know, Lions still hung 30 points on them. So 31, right? So
yep.
It's a, they're just a juggernaut right now. And it's one of the reasons why my confidence with this team is really sky high. They can just, I mean, they're doing stuff that's like teams, you know, earning less than 250 yards on offense and scoring 50 points. Like the last time it happened was like, it happened once, like in the, it's happened like one time between now and like the 1930s when it happened like all the time in the 30s. Right.
Right. Yeah.
But like,
yeah.
But like since then, it's only happened like one other time to have that. So it was a very unusual and historic type game.
All right. My minor non sequitur here, just because you kind of brought it up.
Yeah.
Have you ever looked at stats? Obviously, you have. Look at stats mm-hmm. from like 1930s games and just wonder, what were they watching ludicrous. Out there?
Yeah.
Like, because both teams have like 80 total yards and it's mm-hmm. they were just muddling around at midfield for the entire game.
Yeah. It was just a ball and a, you know, just a cloud of dust. That was pretty much it, right? It was just run into the person in front of you.
Right. Yeah, they had not mastered the forward pass at the time. Although, like, some of those huge passing numbers do come up from that time, too. You know,
yeah, because people didn't know how to defend it.
Right. Right? I mean, somebody has, like, 400 yards passing in a game. You know, nowhere. Well, anyhow. Lions 5 of 5 in the red zone. Easy to go 5 of 5 in the red zone when you're starting off basically in the red zone. Like right. There's no time for your drive to peter out. Like it's not like you can run out of play calls.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they had plenty.
Even having options. Halfback passes.
Halfback. So you've got a wide receiver, fake block, rollout, touchdown to Amon-Ra. You've got a motion your tight end to underneath and then leave him out into the flat. Halfback pass to the tight end. And then you run Khalif on a fake end around where he stops and then pivots and goes the other way. And there's no one that can stay with him in coverage. It's just, and then they ran one in as well. And then, of course, they ran one for 70 as well. That was an awfully fun play from Gibbs as well. Just didn't even slow down, just ran and mm-hmm. poor Quandre Diggs couldn't take the right angle on him. But creativity galore. You know, they have I don't know if we've seen any of those same touchdown passes in any prior game, like that those touchdown plays. And I think it just speaks to the fact that Ben Johnson just has an unlimited playbook at his disposal, it feels like. And he has so many different plays that he can run in the red zone that when opponents are preparing for him, they have to be looking at this and going, they can do almost anything at this point. And because they have, because they've put that on tape, just different ways of scoring, different players are scoring in all different kinds of ways. And it's just, they can beat you so many different ways. They're really, really hard to prepare for. And you're not really seeing replications either. You're seeing him build plays like off of previous, but you're not, everything is new and fresh every single week. And even when you're scoring 7 touchdowns a game, each one seems to be unique in its own way. And it's rare to see that.
They're all snowflakes.
Yeah. I mean, the they can definitely just run it straight up the A gap with Montgomery. And they've done that a handful of times this year, but man, it's awfully impressive to do it. They just set you up and make you pay.
We saw the Lions get Sam Laporta going quite mm-hmm. a bit Six catches, 48 yards, a touchdown. Once again, always finding themselves in the red zone. Gets them a chance to use the red zone target a little bit more. You mentioned the Gibbs 70-yard touchdown run. There's really not much to say more about the offense, except we've got to see Hendon Hooker. We got to see Craig Reynolds. I mean, we're used to Craig Reynolds. We saw him a bunch last year. But saw Hooker. I wish we'd have got to see some more Hendon Hooker, that they should have gotten Goff out of there a little earlier. But, you know, you still sit there. Because at 42-14, even though it was a 28-point game, even though Tennessee definitely had five possessions left in the game, it's like, now take him out. If Tennessee starts making it close, maybe you put him back in. Whatever, you know, everything's fine. It's no big deal.
Yeah, I mean, look, it was almost like three different games. In the first quarter, it was a pretty tough battle, 14-14. Tennessee was running their script and they were doing it well, which is, again, the MO for Tennessee. They run their script well and then they kind of fall apart after that. But tight game in the first quarter, then complete and utter domination for quarters two and three. And then the fourth quarter was just run the clock out with the backups.
Yeah, yeah.
And like the fact that they really did like all their damage in two quarters should be alarming to the rest of the NFL. Like if they put their foot on the gas and tried to keep scoring, who knows where they would have ended up. So it was just quirky game, but a fun game to watch.
All right, flipping over to the defensive side of the ball. They settled in. You've already talked about it. Once the Titans ran off the script, Amik Robertson had a couple of punch outs, Kirby Joseph, another interception.
Yeah.
A pair of interceptions on the day. Gave up, hemorrhaged a lot of yards, but at the same time, after those first 14 points, nothing was really of any consequence. It just went back to how the kind of the bend don't break style the Lions play.
They tried different things, right? Like they tried different blitzes and the blitzes didn't necessarily work. They weren't getting as much pressure that they wanted. But they were holding on from a defensive standpoint. And then to add into the fact that they continue to turn the ball or get to generate turnovers. It's awfully impressive. They have I think, what is it, 10 interceptions this year or something like that, if I'm not mistaken. And then they have, because Kirby has 5, Branch has 4, and then Nowoski has 1. Yeah, so 10 interceptions. I think that's like second in the league behind the Vikings. I think overall their plus minus is in the top one or two in the league as well. They just keep finding ways to turn the ball over. And that's kind of an MO of the whole NFC North right now. The Vikings are really generating a lot of turnovers. The Bears are benefiting from their turnovers, and the Packers, they lead the league in turnovers. And we'll talk about that in a bit, but the Lions continue to find ways to get the ball and when they're on defense, and it's huge. It's huge. It's a key part of success. Well, things that successful teams do. And if you look at like the plus margin levels of the teams in the NFL, I think only one of the top 11, like don't have a winning record. Like, so 10 out of the top 11 all are, you know, have a winning record, and, you know, turnovers are a huge part of that.
All right. Special teams wise, we already talked about all of it. Khalif Raymond won special teams player of the week. Campbell, when he went into the locker room to hand out game balls, he, you know, passed over Khalif Raymond, but pointed him out right from the get before we get to Khalif. You know, everybody knew. You mentioned the Kendall Vildor, Khalil Dorsey, 72-yard kickoff return. You talked about Sione Vaki punching out the ball and in punt coverage. Not much else to say about the special teams.
Bates hits from 51.
Oh, yeah. His all-time long. Well, his NFL long.
Mm-hmm. And I thought, and you mentioned Vildor accidentally, but I thought Vildor actually was a really, really good gunner. He made some plays as a gunner that were as impressive of plays as I think I've seen in a long time. He's really showed up in that aspect. Understands contain, speed, leverage, getting off blocks, making t- it's just he looks fantastic out there as a gunner. And that's, I think, something maybe we didn't anticipate, but it's certainly a nice bonus to be able to have really strong gunners. No surprise when we get to DVOA, Lions special teams, number one, right?
Yeah, like, they definitely will get the boost to number one.
They are firing on all cylinders. Everything is working on special teams right now. And you're talking about like five, six, seven different players that are making important plays and winning. And those situations, you saw the fallout of it. You put your offense in good spots. You help your defense out. I mean, Jack Fox is unbelievable, and we didn't even mention him. Like, he's the way he booms the ball and puts him in corners. It's just everything's working well.
A lot better than he was last, because he did take a little dip last season, but he's been great this year.
I tell you, Dave Phipp deserves a lot of credit for what he's done with this special teams right now.
Lions only penalized three times as well. I guess we should add that. None of them by Terrion Arnold, right? Who played a very good game himself. He's coming around.
Key pass breakup on a third down, right? Or was it fourth? I can try to remember if it was third and they punted or if it was fourth. But yeah, it might have been fourth. I'm blanking on it. There was a lot that going on in that game.
Right.
But he had perfect positioning, reached around and knocked it down. It was just a pretty terrific play at the moment. And he's going to be a guy that this defense is going to need like tremendously. Like, if they are having to manufacture pressures and use their linebackers in order to create pressure, it's going to put a lot of stress on Arnold and Carlton Davis. And, you know, we'll see what these guys are made of, because they're going to have a lot. They're going to be the guys that I think are going to feel the most pressure from Aiden Hutchinson not being around, because right now the Lions are still looking for an answer on how to create pressure consistently. And if they can't do that, that puts Terrion and Carlton in really tough spots.
All right. Time to talk about the Green Bay Packers. Lions favored by 3.5, which is crazy to imagine that. I mean, it's not that right now they're the hottest team in the NFL. You would say the best team in the NFL, especially with the way they're playing. Like, they're the team right now, and everything ebbs and flows, and there'll be other teams that are going to push their way up to the top as the season goes along. Hopefully the Lions stay on this high from here on out. But Lions favored by 3.5. Crazy at Lambeau Field. They're favored by 3.5. Weather is going to be in. Oh, go ahead.
I was going to say, quick note on that. I do a opening odds article. And so I go in and I look a week ahead in order to like do a little prep. And on Sunday morning, it was Packers -1.5. And then they played the games, and then the fallout from the games, they did a 5-point swing there to go into the Lions' favor. So very big point swing. I was a bit surprised.
Temperature the day of the game, probably around game time, 56 degrees. So it's not going to be brutally cold, although it'll be colder than it has been, definitely colder than it has been here with our unseasonably warm weather. And in Green Bay, it's been the same. So it'll be a little bit of a fish out of water for both teams. Games at 4:25. I think I mentioned that on Sunday. It's the Fox crew, America's game of the week. Kevin Burkhardt, Tom Brady, along with Aaron Andrews and Tom Rinaldi down on the field. Referee, Cleet Blakeman. He must live nearby. 17 seasons in the NFL, 15 of them as a ref, throws 16.3 flags, way above that average of 13 on the season. 13's up from last year.
Yeah, 13 is up from last year, and Cleet is certainly part of that problem. I don't know why they put Cleet on this game more often than they don't. It's just Cleet Blakeman is
gotta live in Chicago or something.
He's one of the worst.
Try to keep him near home. Sorry.
He's one of the worst refs in the league. You may recall a Lions Packers game from a few years ago in
Legal
Lambeau
hands to the
Field.
Face.
Illegal hands to the face against Graham Glasgow, where Graham Glasgow was getting completely mugged, yet he got called for the penalty. That was in Green Bay with Cleet Blakeman. And I just, the guy kind of has bad juju. Now, it's worth noting, the last game he reffed was completely flawless. Again, the last Lions game he reffed was completely flawless. We didn't even see him. We didn't even notice him. We were worried about him ahead of the game, and then didn't happen. Everything was fine. So I'm hoping more of the same. I'm hoping against all odds that Cleet Blakeman doesn't screw this one up. I just don't get why you put bad referees in big games.
Well, I think it's because they live nearby. I really believe that they try to keep these referees closer to home as much as possible. I know they can't do that like completely, but
mm-hmm.
so he must live in the Midwest somewhere.
I feel like we see him way more than we need to.
Yeah, it bolsters my point.
Let me look up the game he played. Okay, so last year he was the ref twice for the Lions game. And the one that I was referencing was the Raiders game on Monday Night Football. He was the ref for that game. Remember that game? Nothing. It was like it was very fine game. Lions got four penalties.
Wasn't that also the Halloween game? The week of Halloween game? It wasn't Halloween, wasn't it?
It was
October 30th, like the day or two before.
It was October 30th. You are correct. Lions got four penalties. The Raiders got five. So it was a relatively clean game, which is nice. Downside is he also refereed the 49ers game in the NFC Championship. But we're not going to talk about that game. So, Cleet, I don't like him. I don't like the history with
really?
Him.
Really?
There's so much animosity that I have with him and the bad luck he brings. But let's hope it's more like the Raiders game, and we won't notice him that much.
Well, you do mention, the bad luck. And the Lions, they're no longer the Lions. It's certainly not the case, although there may still be a curse.
Maybe this is a curse they take down as well. They took down the Seahawks. They took down Dallas. They took down. Remember we talked about last week. They hadn't beat the Titans,
since they became the Titans.
They took down the Greg Olsen curse as well, right? So maybe they take down the Cleet Blakeman curse.
I don't think we're really grasping at straws here, because they beat the Raiders last year when he was officiating the game. Yeah, there's really no Green Bay curse to avenge anymore, because they've won, what, three times in a row at Lambeau Field now it is?
At least two. Yeah. They've won three of the last four.
Oh, yeah, just at two. Yeah, because they did win in the 3-13 year. They've won the last two seasons. So. So there's really nothing here for that. There is the how are the Lions emerging as, one of America's teams? Like, will they call more penalties on Green Bay or on the Lions and more shaky penalties on one team? The Packers do have the tradition of being treated more than fairly in most football games they compete in.
Sure. I think it would be interesting to see if there was that swing now that the Lions are like
one of the marquee teams, becoming one of the marquee teams.
Yeah. It's something to keep an eye on.
All right. Packers 6-2. They've lost to the Vikings and the Eagles. The Eagles in that week one game down in Brazil.
Yep.
The Vikings loss is when Jordan Love was out. They've beaten the Texans and the Jaguars.
It was the game Jordan Love came back. That was the day the first game back.
Oh, that's right. Yeah. So that's right. So that Malik Willis was able to win.
Yes.
His two starts. And he even came in again a little bit against the Jaguars when Jordan Love went out. We'll talk about that probably in a little bit. Last 2 weeks, they've won in walk-off field goal contests against Texans Jaguars.
Yeah, they've done well. I think they also beat the Titans, and I forget who the other team is, but you know, they've shown to be explosive at times on offense, but I feel like their offense can be a bit inconsistent. But it's a good offense, and they do have a little bit of a turnover problem, and I think that hurts them a little bit. But overall, they're pretty efficient. They can get it done on the ground. They can get it done in, through the air, and if they can corral those turnovers, you know, they're a tough team to stick with. But Jordan Love has thrown, he's played 5 games. He's thrown 9 interceptions, and he's thrown in at least one interception in each of those games. And so it's a tough spot. Actually, I think he's played 5.5 games. So technically he has one, you know, last game where he started and then left. So, but he's thrown interception in each of those games. At least. And so that's something he's got to fix, because as we just talked about, turnovers are a big deal and they could be the difference in this game. And it's something that the Lions will definitely be looking to take advantage of.
All right. The other teams the Packers have beaten this year, they've beaten the Colts. Mm. They've beaten the Rams in LA, and they've beaten the Cardinals at home. So those are the other 3 wins.
Thank you.
DVOA numbers, Lions, number 1 overall, Packers, number 8 overall. Lions offensively up at number 4, the Green Bay defense, number 12. Lions passing has dipped. We kind of pointed out why. Mm-hmm. Lions are 12th overall passing the ball. Green Bay is 10th against the pass. The Lions running game is still number 1. Green Bay is at that number 12 spot. On defense, the Lions are number 3 in DVOA. The Green Bay offense is number 5 overall. Lions defend the pass, 4th best in the league, versus Green Bay's 5th best at throwing the ball. Lions 8th against the run, once again dipping due to the game they had against the Titans, whereas Green Bay is up at number 6 at running the ball. Special teams, Eric, you pointed out the Lions have ascended to number 1 in DVOA special teams. And good news for the Lions, the Packers ranked down at number 26. Not as bad as the Texans, but definitely in the bottom quartile. Down in the bottom quartile of the league.
Yeah. Yeah, Lions were one of the only a handful. I think there's only a couple teams that hadn't been, you know, ascended to number 1 in DVOA at this stage of the season, and so they finally got it. But they didn't just get it; like, they're number 1 by a lot, like a lot, and it's because they're just collectively good in all phases. The passing did dip. Basically from last game, just kind of like how we talked about the run defense dipped for a while there because of Seattle, and they worked it back into the top 10, but it's still, you know, at 8, it's still lower part of the top 10 as opposed to, you know, top 5 like they were last season. So I'm sure that it's another area they're looking to improve, but it'll be important for this game to take care of that. But look, they're the most efficient team right now. They're most efficient in DVOA. They're scoring the most points. They have their second in turnover differential. Like, it, all those key things that you look for that point to the difference between a good team and a great team, the Lions are like ranked at the top or close to the top. And it's a, you know, you look at expected points value, you look at like almost any metric you can think of, and the Lions typically show out well. And so it's a bit unusual to see them playing at this high of a level right now, especially with like losing a guy like Aiden, but they've been awfully impressive, and it's going to, you know, it makes looking at the next opponent as every game is a winnable game, right? Like, a couple years ago, we would have looked at this game and been like, no, it's a loss. Mark it down. It's okay. Like, that's honestly, we would have. And now it's like, yeah, they should, not only can they win this game, but maybe they should. win this game, even though the Packers are a top 10 team, arguably, right? Maybe even higher. Like, they should definitely be considered a top 10 team right now, the way that they're playing. And the, again, the statistics measure that out. But the Lions are just, they're just a juggernaut right now. And this should be another game that I think they go into the, into Lambeau expecting to win. And I think that's a, that's a heck of a lot of fun.
No, there's a team in their way trying to stop them. Let's talk about them. Led by Matt LaFleur, who has been the coach in Green Bay for 5 years already. He's
led 2019. The
Packers. Yeah, 2019, 56 wins in those first 5 years. Second best in the NFL, in NFL history over that, you know, span of time for a first-time head coach. He'll, you know, he's the head coach, helps lead the offense with offensive coordinator Adam Stenovich. We'll start with the Green Bay offense, right? Quarterbacked by Jordan Love. We've already talked about him a little bit. The guy you and I, Eric, liked it back when he was at Utah State, and I actually took a really pointed interest in him, like when Utah State almost eked out a victory in East Lansing. You know, they lost 33-30. It's like, oh, come on. This guy's not going to be that, like, because I have to follow those guys. It's like he's going to fall off a cliff the rest of the season. He better at least be Mountain West Conference Player of the Year, and he was. And he was very good in college, and he's certainly developing as a pro. You mentioned he's had turnover issues so far this year, also has injury issues this year. But last year had a great season and has a bright future, and all the analysts and all the talking heads really like him.
Yeah, he's awfully talented. The scheme is definitely friendly for him as well. LaFleur has, you know, a really deep coaching background that touches on a lot of great offensive minds. You know, he's coached with he got his break in coaching with Brian Kelly, who's the head coach of LSU. He hooked up with Mike Shanahan back in the early 2010 era. He's met and coached alongside Kyle Shanahan, Sean McVay, Mike McDaniel, all head coaches in the league. Even coached next to Saleh, or Robert Saleh, who was the Jets head coach for before he got fired this season, right?
It's where Saleh works now. He works with the Green Bay Packers as an assistant, right? Like these assistant working with the offense to prepare him for upcoming defenses. That's what his role is, right? With
the Packers. They first connected in 2004 at Central Michigan under head coach Brian Kelly. And what an unusual staff for Central Michigan to produce such important coaches in the NFL now.
And look where they are now.
Look, right, exactly.
Central Michigan. Oh, no, not the coaches, Central Michigan. You know, who's been stuck with Jim McElwain for years, and the team just keeps getting worse.
And so, you know, LaFleur has tapped into McVay. He's tapped into Shanahan. He's tapped into both Shanahans, really. But he's really entrenched himself in some good offensive minds. He's developed a nice scheme. His scheme is adaptable and friendly. It's West Coast scheme, so they use a lot of the things that West Coast teams do. He attacks a little bit more vertical than some of his counterparts there. But he calls the plays, and he's the one that's talking to Jordan Love and or Malik Willis when it's time to make the play call, and he does a nice job of setting them up for success. Now, Love is an ascending player, and he is a quarterback that a lot of people like, but there's weaknesses to his game as well. And yes, we talked about the 9 interceptions. And yes, as you pointed out, he's now on his second injury, injured his groin last game, did not practice on Wednesday. He's said he may not practice at all this week, but he still wouldn't rule himself out for the game, even if he didn't practice. But there's a chance he plays. And I think the Lions are preparing as if he's going to play. But if he does, there are things that he's a little bit more susceptible this year. When he's not pressured, he does very well. His passer rating is like 114, which is like third best in the NFL when he's not pressured. His PFF grade's like 78 when he's not pressured, like both high. But if you can pressure him, there's a drastic drop off. His passer rating goes from 114 to 61. His PFF grade goes from 78 to 50. And so that pressure, he's just not handling it very well this year for whatever reason. He's struggling. And then on top of that, when you blitz him, it's having a similar effect. He's going from a much higher rate of success to a much lower rate of success just with the intention of blitzing. He seems to get a little bit more, he seems to be pushing the ball a little bit more in those situations, maybe rushing it a little bit more. The other area where he's struggling this year is against man coverage. His yards per passing attempt against man coverage is 4.3, which is 31st in the NFL. It's really just for whatever reason, he's just not reading it well. I think part of that is why he's throwing interceptions. But again, in the Lions' favor, the Lions play 47% man coverage, which is the most in the entire NFL. So while Love is playing well, he's susceptible to pressure. He's not playing well against man, and he's turning the ball over. Those are all three things that the Lions are doing that is helping them succeed. So it's a good it's not as bad of a matchup for the Lions this year as maybe it was a year ago when he was having a little bit more success. The areas in which he's struggling really fall right into the Lions' strengths, and so they may have him in a tougher spot than what he's been in the past.
Do you want to mention anything about Malik Willis? Because there probably is some potential for him to play. His they're not he's a danger with his legs. Numbers definitely not as good as Jordan Love's, arm. But obviously he's the backup quarterback. And he was kind of left for dead by the Titans.
So again, you got to credit LaFleur for helping Willis get some confidence, but he was also putting him in good situations, right? Like he doesn't run the exact same offense that he's going to run for Love when Willis is in the game. When Willis is in the game, he's going to introduce more RPOs, he's going to introduce more quarterback runs, and he's going to play, he calls the game more along the line of to Willis's strengths. And so again, this is what makes LaFleur a tough coach, is that he is adaptable. And so you lose, you still have the deep ball, and but he's not as balanced as a quarterback as Love is. Like Love can he can hit at all three levels, even though he likes to go short and deep. He can hit in a lot of different spots. He spreads the ball out, whereas Malik is a little bit more structured in where he tends to go, and he's just not as flexible. But he has the legs that really is the wild card for him. So I would be it's very possible that they see him, because who knows? Like if Love does play and he's nursing a groin injury going into the game, he's going to be limited as a runner. And then if he does injure it, they may have to turn to Malik Willis anyway. So I think you absolutely have to be prepared for Willis in this game.
All right, in the backfield, leading the way is Josh Jacobs, who's currently questionable, came over from the Raiders this offseason. Backup's Emmanuel Wilson, and filling out the roster is Chris Brooks.
So Jacobs plays about 70% of the offensive snaps. Wilson and Brooks play about 15% of the snaps each. They each get a little bit of love, but it's really the Josh Jacobs show. Josh Jacobs had a really good year a couple years ago. I think it was a NFL rushing leader. I think it was 2 years ago. But in my opinion, even though he's got a lot of skills and he's young and he can catch the ball, I don't think he's as good as Aaron Jones. And so I think they actually as weird as it sounds, I actually think they downgraded at the running in their running back talent. Now, they've tried to dedicate themselves more to the run this year, and you've seen that success. And so Jordan, I'm sorry, Josh Jacobs is producing well, but I think from a talent perspective, I don't think he's as good as Aaron Jones. He's not as dynamic. He's not as tough. So like, if you think back to like when the Lions played against the Vikings, I don't think you're going to play a player that was, that can do the things that Aaron Jones did to the Lions a couple weeks ago.
So Green Bay is in just regular run of the mill yardage stats, fifth overall, 0.2 yards rushing per game more than the Lions, 156.9 to the Lions, 156.7. So this is definitely a danger area for the Lions. They're going to be susceptible against the run, which they have been the last few weeks. But we'll see. Maybe they have a good game plan for what's coming at them.
Yeah.
Wide receiver group led by Jaden Reed, former Michigan State Spartan, also Romeo Doubs, Christian Watson, Dontavian Wicks, Bo Melton, and Malik Heath.
Yeah, so this is probably the deepest wide receiver group, but I don't think they have like that elite top tier wide receiver one. I think Jaden Reed is right on the cusp of that. And he's close to maybe being their kind of like their, like Amon-Ra's undersized, and so he gets kind of pigeonholed as not a typical traditional wide receiver one. And right. I think Jaden Reed will go through that same type of thing. He's not this traditional wide receiver one, but he is by far, I think, the best wide receiver of the group. Doubs had a clash and got suspended a couple weeks ago, but he's probably their second best wide receiver. Watson and Wicks have kind of calmed down over the hype that they had a couple years ago. Melton's playing pretty decent as well, but like, so like, I think all five of them can play, but Reed and Doubs are really the producers. And in my opinion, Reed's the best of the bunch. So it'll be tough for the Lions to defend as a collective, right? Like they can't just say, it's not Justin Jefferson, let's just, you know, run a shadow over the top of him or something like that. Like they're going to have to play a lot of these guys man up one-on-one, and Reed will probably give them the hardest task, in my opinion. But the other guys are talented too. You have different, each one has a different skill that you have to be conscious of. And, but Reed is, I think, the one that is the biggest problem because he can do so many different things. You can use him on screens, you can use them on end rounds, you can use them deep, you can use them short. Like you can, all the areas in which Jordan Love finds success, those are all the areas that you will find Jordan Reed or Jaden Reed having success as well.
This group of wide receivers probably not as good as the Rams, when the Lions face the Rams, when the Lions face the Buccaneers, but definitely right up there as far as talented wide receiver. Like they're deeper.
Yeah,
I guess you could say than a lot of the other teams they've played this season. But yeah. That high-end talent, definitely not the best. Tight end group, the fantasy football revelation, as well as on-the-field performance revelation. Tucker Kraft leads the way. Ben Sims and John Fitzpatrick are the other two tight ends. Luke Musgrave out on IR.
Kraft has been the guy that's really stepped up, plays the majority of their snaps, almost all of them. They will sprinkle in the other guys as well, but it's not as frequent. And most of the tight end energy goes through Kraft. And he had a touchdown last game on tight end game, you know, did a little dance on his way to the end zone, which I'm sure was made the Jaguars fans very happy.
All right. Offensive line left to right, a bunch of questionable guys on here. Left tackle, Rashid Walker. Left guard, Elkton Jenkins. Center is Josh Myers. Right guard, Sean Ryan. Right tackle, Zach Tom.
And to make things really fun, Sean Ryan and first-round pick Jordan Morgan rotate at right guard. It's about a 75-25% split. But they invested a first-round pick in Morgan, and they're trying to get Morgan up to speed, but he's being outplayed by Sean Ryan. So Ryan is getting the snaps, but they're still finding opportunities to get Morgan on the field. When Morgan is on the field, it's mostly like his success is mostly in the run game. He's very susceptible. Again, he's not susceptible as a pass blocker, but he's having success as a run blocker. But they rotate those guys because they're trying to develop Morgan by giving him snaps. Walker and Zach Tom, they're decent tackles, not anything to write home about, but they're decent. I think Elgin Jenkins, the left guard, is the best offensive lineman on the group. And then Josh Myers, the center, is probably the weakest offensive lineman of the group. And so you got a really good player next to maybe a sub-average player. And then next that on the other side of him is a rotating guard position. So opportunity for the interior players. I don't think there's like a really like glaring weakness that you are going to attack. I mean, maybe up the middle, maybe you threaten with some blitzes into a gap because, and then force Myers to make decisions. That would make a lot of sense. But from a pure, if you're just going to rush four standpoint, you know, it's a decent offensive line that's done well. And especially as pass blockers,
only have surrendered 12 sacks through 8 games this season.
Right. So like, I should clarify that as pass blockers, they're all the starters are playing well. As run blockers, not so much, but they are finding success. Like you said, they're gaining yards on the ground. They're just not as easy.
Consistent or easy.
Right. Right, exactly. So, like, why Sean Ryan is playing more than Morgan is because he's a better pass blocker, and Morgan's a better run blocker. And so the passing element is more important to them, and that's why they play with him. I think from a pressure standpoint, I think Walker is the one who gives up the most pressures, which isn't unusual for a left tackle. But, you know, they all kind of give up about the same. Again, except for Elgin, who's probably the, like I said, the best one.
All right, flipping over to the defensive side of the ball, the defensive coordinator for the Packers is Jeff Hafley, who used to be the head coach at Boston College, but left the job at Boston College to become the defensive coordinator for the Packers. That's kind of an odd coaching job jump, although from here and going into the future, a lot of folks say, well, that's going to be more normal as college football continues to change. Four-man front for the Packers. Kenny Clark and T.J. Slayton have started all the games in the middle with the defensive ends or the edge players are Preston Smith and Rashawn Gary.
So let me, just because Halfley's new, let me just do a little background on him. So you might remember him because he was defensive coordinator at Ohio State briefly back in 2019. But his big selling point was when he coached with the 49ers and specifically Kyle Shanahan and Robert Saleh. So if you're looking for the connection, this is where it is. When he coached with Shanahan and Saleh, that's when he develops his relationship with LaFleur. And again, why Saleh is in Green Bay right now, probably, right? Because he has basically tried to adapt Saleh's defense that Saleh ran with the 49ers and then implemented with the Jets and also probably the one that the Texans run right now as well, right? With they run the similar system down in Houston. So you've got a similar attacking style of defense. They like to play fast. They run a one gapping 4-3, which is a big shift, especially for their interior guys, right? They were a 3-4-2 gapping team last year. Now they're being asking them to one gap. And so I think you're seeing a little bit of fallout from that. Especially like you mentioned T.J. Slayton is the starter. I think he's struggling with the one-gapping system. It's not really designed for him, and he's having a hard time with it. But the rest of their defensive line does well. They don't Okay. In the secondary, they run a lot of single high coverage. They run a lot of man, which is again kind of different than last year. They ran more zone and they ran more dual safeties last year. So now they're shifting. They're almost completely shifting how the secondary operates. In addition, that when they do run zone, they run like a cover one man quite a bit, but then they also run like a cover three, which means they drop their when their corners will go from playing man to zone, and then they drop pretty far back and keep things in front of them. So they're trying to prevent the big play. They will adjust it to their opponent, but they typically play about 75% of the snaps in nickel, and then they'll stay 25% of the time in base. They don't blitz a lot because, again, that's not a characteristic. If you look at like San Francisco, the Jets, Houston, those defenses just don't blitz a lot because their philosophy is to try and get pressure with four. And so you're seeing the same thing with Halfley. He's not blitzing a ton, but he's started to amp it up a little bit more lately. And so what you're seeing with him is he was blitzing, I think, around like 17 or 18% of the time, but now he's turning the dial up on certain downs. So first and second down, it's still kind of low on the blitz rate, but when you get to third down, he's blitzing over 50% of the time on third downs. So he's blitzing a ton on third downs. And when he's blitzing, he's going to blitz in a similar way that the Vikings blitz, right? Where he's going to overload the line with like six or seven guys, and then he's going to drop one side of the line into coverage and then overload the other side of the line with a fire blitz. And they're going to try and, fool you with where their blitz is coming from. And then they're going to try and overload you by trying to maybe put like three rushers against two blockers or four rushers against three blockers. They're trying to get an advantage in that way. And that's their kind of philosophy on, excuse me, on dialing up the blitz. And so we've seen that more lately, but they do it a lot on third down. They really don't blitz a lot on the early downs. So for the Lions, I'm sure Ben Johnson is already keenly aware of this, and he will have a similar approach to like the Vikings game, where he's going to basically, hey, if they blitz a lot on third down, let's just not get into third down. Let's just stay ahead of the sticks, take riskier, let's try and make riskier, bigger gain passes on first and second down to try and get into a spot where you don't have to face a blitz where they're going to try and overload you like that. So very different defense than what we saw last year. And because of that, you're having very different results. They're having a lot of turnovers. They're playing well against both the pass and the run, but like any defense, there's also weaknesses. If they're in their cover one, they're susceptible to the deep ball. If they're in their cover one or cover three, they're susceptible to crossers and and over routes. Intermediate part of the field is very vulnerable, and that's where Jared Goff just carves people up. Tennessee was really weak in the intermediate part of the field, and that's where Goff attacked when he did. Also going to be susceptible down the seam. So again, you're talking about Amon-Ra and Sam Laporta having
I thought you were
opportunity.
talking about Jameson Williams. Oh, wait a second.
They have this defense is strong, but again, it's not a defense that the Lions are unfamiliar with. They've are familiar with it from last year. This 49ers team, they're familiar with it because they've seen variations of kind of this against Minnesota. And it's a defense that I'm sure they have been preparing for because they know they're going to have to face the Niners again. And they have Houston coming up as well, who's going to run almost the same defense. So this is something that they're not going to be like surprised about. Like they're going to take this Shanahan-esque defense and they're going to look for the weak spots and they're going to try and take advantage of it. The hard part is that the Packers, they're talented. Like they have a handful of guys that are really like above average players, and then they have a handful of guys that maybe are not. And that's kind of like the collective, right? They rotate. You mentioned the four starters on the defensive line.
Yeah. Hang on. So let me. All right. So I talked about Smith, Clark, Slayton, Gary. Those are your starters. Off the bench, mm-hmm. a couple of first round draft picks. Yes. Lucas Van Ness from Iowa, Devontae Wyatt from Georgia. Also, they got Colby Wooden, Kingsley Enagbare, Brenton Cox Jr., Carl Brooks. So between Brooks, Van Ness, and Wyatt, and I think Enagbare, those guys off the bench, six sacks.
Yeah, and they all play, right? It's not a, you know, we're going to run our starters 70-80% of the time. It's like we're going to run our starters 60% of the time, 65-70 max. Not going to get higher than that because we're going to lean on our starters for 30 or 40% of the snaps. Or I'm sorry, our reserves for 30 or 40% of the snaps. So a guy like Rashawn Gary, even though he is arguably their best defensive lineman, he's going to get snapped. Engbari is going to come in and fill in for him and keep him fresh. Preston Smith on the other side has been, you know, a guy who has historically gotten 80-90% of snaps with the Packers. Well, they have Van Ness, a first round pick from 2 years ago. He's a guy that's going to, he's going to get his run in there as well. So they're going to rotate them out. Even Kenny Clark, who's one of the best, you know, defensive linemen in the NFL. He gets subbed out by Wyatt. And so like it's a strong rotation of defensive linemen. Again, the weak spot is the nose tackle spot, which is TJ Slayton, a little bit of Carl Brooks. Like, and even Carl's not really a traditional nose tackle. I think he fits the scheme a little bit better, but they really like Slayton. They're really leaning on him because they need him to stop the run. But he's a two-gapping center or two-gapping nose that you're asking to play a one-gapping scheme, and he's getting kind of bullied out there. So tough front. They're going to stay fresh. They're going to attack, and they're going to just rotate their guys over so that they're fresh. And it'll be a big task for the Lions' offensive line because there's talent, like I said, both in the starting lineup and on the bench.
Linebacker group. We got Quay Walker, Eric Wilson, Isaiah McDuffie, if they run with three, coming off the bench, Edgerrin Cooper, Tyron Hopper.
So it's they typically run, while they will run some three, they typically run a lot of two, just because they run so much nickel, but they do run a lot of base, maybe 20-25% of the time, and that'll be three linebackers. Quay Walker is dealing with a concussion. He was concussed not last week, but the week before. He missed last week's game because he couldn't clear the protocols. But he's back to practicing in full this week, which is a good sign for them that he's on his way to recover. Wilson is a player who I think is stepping up and playing well for them. McDuffie is, I think, a guy who was a really good college player, but he's more athlete than linebacker. And then they drafted Edgerrin Cooper in the second round. And again, he is more athlete than linebacker. And so when Walker and Wilson are on the field, you're going to get more traditional linebacking play. But when you see McDuffie or Cooper out there, it's more athletes. And so it'll be interesting to see if they check into runs, like when those lighter, more athletic linebackers are on the field, because they're not as suited to take on the David Montgomerys of the world. Or maybe you get a different linebacker on the field that you like against Jahmyr Gibbs. It'll be an interesting kind of chess match to see how they try and play that. But, you know, Walker, assuming he is cleared, is probably their best. And Wilson, I think, is probably maybe playing their best, his best right now. And the other guys are, like I said, exciting athletes that are still learning how to play linebacker.
All right. To the defensive secondary, outside corners, Jair Alexander, Keyshawn Nixon start, you know, 100% of the time they're playing. Now comes to the nickel situation. You'll see there's safeties mixed in there with corners, just like how the Lions do it. Eric Stokes, Javon Bullard, Evan Williams, Xavier McKinney, as you talk about single high safeties, he would be their single high safety right in those situations. Hopefully, I'm not screwing this all up. The bench in the for the corners, Corey Ballantyne, mentioned Stokes, Carrington Ballantyne, and for a couple extra safeties, Zane Anderson and Keaton Oladapo.
So let's start with the outside corners. Their starters are Alexander, who injured himself on like one of the last plays of the game last week and didn't practice to start the week. So he's susceptible to not playing. But Alexander is their one pure starter. And then Nixon is their other starter. But if you can recall from seasons past, Nixon has always been their nickel. And he's, I think, better suited as a nickel. But in Halfley's scheme, they like to intermix three safety sets and or three corner sets, and depending on their nickel packages. So what you will see is Nixon will sometimes kick out inside to the nickel, and sometimes they will live with Bullard at the nickel. When they want a corner at the nickel, Nixon is the guy who kicks out, and then they will either use Stokes or Valentine on the outside. They don't have a preference necessarily for one over the other. It just kind of depends on how the game is going. In their last game, they used both of them on the outside and Nixon in the slot. Bullard is the guy they think they prefer in the slot, and they would prefer those three safety sets. But he is a rookie, and he's still got some flaws, and so he's only seen the field, you know, part of the time. Now, when you look at their safety group, yes, McKinney is their single high. He's the guy who typically ends up being, you know, we talked about the fact that when they run a cover one or cover three, McKinney is the guy who drifts up, but they will also drift him down because Evan Williams, another rookie, has been surprisingly very good, and he's been able to flex with McKinney. Now, Williams also got hurt, exited the game, and was unable to return. He also missed practice this week, and he may not play. If he does not play, they're going to take Bullard out of the nickel, put him at safety with McKinney. Then they'll take Nixon and put Nixon at the nickel, and then they'll either put Stokes or Valentine at corner. If Alexander can't play, both Stokes and Valentine will have to play at corner. So it'll be important to kind of watch the Packers injury report this week to end up seeing how the fallout happens, because they may end up having their outside corners one. They may have one or two replacements in place in order because of all the shuffling, and Evan Williams being out low key is kind of a big deal. He's been playing well above his head, well above his fourth round draft status. He's been one of the top, you know, 10 receivers in the league this year, along with Xavier McKinney. And he's been a big part of why they've been able to have success. Bullard, who was drafted in the second round, I think is highly talented, but he's a slot nickel who can play free safety as opposed to Williams, who's more like a pure free safety. So it's a little out of box for Bullard, something he can certainly do. But by taking Bullard out of the slot, you take Nixon and put him in, and then you start a little domino effect here, and you end up getting a guy like Eric Stokes or Valentine in, and they're trying to match up with one of your outside guys. So it gets a little tricky, because if Bullard does stay at the nickel, he's going to have a hard time matching up against Amon-Ra. If Nixon plays at the middle, at the nickel, he's going to match up better against Amon-Ra, but then you're maybe going to open things up for Sam Laporta, right, against the other safety. So it's depending on who ends up playing in this game from the Packers secondary standpoint, the Lions could really have it. Just they're going to go down the list of which guy is going to end up having the better matchup, because again, like we talked about at the top, the Lions are going to have an answer for whatever the Packers have to put out there. And so the Packers secondary has been a huge part of their success. but with two starters injured and potentially missing the game, could be a big advantage for the Lions if one or both miss.
All right, that's it for the Green Bay defense. Flipping over to the special teams, the kicker is Brandon McManus, and that's because they kicked the previous guy. Was it Braden Narveson? They kicked him to the curb after six
Oh,
games
yeah.
and a handful of missed field goals. So far, so good for McManus. He's hit all four of his field goal attempts, all four, six of his extra point attempts. His longest field goal has only been 45 yards, so he hasn't been tested yet. He has hit from over 60 in his career at least once, but he also spent a lot of years in Denver. He's a career 80% kicking field goals. So he's all right. Average kicker, lots of experience. So, he's been able to hang around for a reason.
Yeah, and he made both those clutch field goals to win,
Right,
and
to win
they
the
weren't,
last two games.
yeah, they weren't hard, but
I'd like to go see you go out and do them. I'm just kidding.
they weren't overly challenging, but they were, they were
They
pressured.
weren't gimmies either.
Yeah, they weren't pressured. They were pressure oriented for sure. So, yeah, I think he's a good kicker.
Daniel Whalen's the punter. He's in his second year. His gross punting average is bumped up. He's still below 50 yards a kick, but 48.1 is nothing to shake a stick at. Roughly 40% of his kicks or 40% of his punts go inside the 20-yard line.
He's good. I mean, I don't have a whole lot to wax about him, but I think he's perfectly acceptable, and I think maybe above average, I would say.
Keyshawn Nixon's the return man, returns all the kicks. He and Jaden Reed kind of split punt return duties. Reed's returned six of them, and Nixon's returned four. Pedestrian averages, nothing like what a Khalif Raymond can do.
Right. I'm with you.
Matt Orzech is the long snapper. He's got one tackle on the season. That's all I see on him.
Yep, he's a former Super Bowl long snapper with the Rams back in the
Oh,
day. So,
that's an accolade.
yeah, certainly. I feel like the Rams have just they've it's like the Rams in Baltimore end up having like this like these like this row of long snappers that have spent at least like a season in their organization at one point. So, and I think Ozark played there too. So at Baltimore at one point. So yeah, it's good. So
All right,
he's okay.
that's it for the Packers. You won last week. I picked the Lions. Oh, I picked the Lions at a lower score, right? And
Yeah, here's the deal.
tighter to the spread.
If Tennessee would have scored another again, if they would have scored, you would have won.
I
But
still
they
don't quite
got
understand our scoring system. Been
it's
7 years,
just
and I still don't understand it.
here's how it
No,
breaks
you don't
down.
have to break it down. No, nobody
Well,
needs to know. Really, they don't.
it's all about differential. It's all
Right.
about point
I know.
differential.
I know
So,
it is.
yeah,
It's not traditional.
it was a lot closer than I thought it would be, but yeah, the Titans' lack of scoring, because like you had Titans scoring 17 points, so if they would
Right.
have
I think it
kicked
was
another field goal,
24-17,
you would have
right?
hit that on the head. It would have been
Yeah.
perfect,
Yeah.
and I think you would have won then, but they did not. Yeah, they stalled. So I do take another game here,
There you
and
go. Two games now.
I'm up three. It's 5-2.
Okay. All right.
Yeah.
There's still plenty of season left.
You better get to work, buddy.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
So I think the over under on this game is like 47 or something like that, or 48, or maybe right in between.
Seemingly a low number for what
That's what
these
I
two
thought too.
offenses are capable of, but
Right.
long sustained drives will limit scoring.
Packers scoring offense is sixth in the NFL. They score 27 points a game. That's their average. Their defense allows 21.3, which is top 11. Lions scoring offense is 33.4 a game. and they allow 19.1 points a game, which is eighth best. So you have basically two of the top six scoring offenses and two of the top 11 scoring defenses. So I'm expecting them to score. Like, I just think these offenses are made to score. And so I'm expecting an over here. Like maybe quite a bit over. I think the Packers are very dangerous.
They are
And at the same time,
coiled snake.
I think the Lions have answers to a lot of the areas that the Packers are good, and a lot of areas that the Packers are bad are the areas that the Lions are good. And I think that's going to be just enough. It's going to be just enough of those little things that add up to the Lions having an advantage. I hope it's not as close as I think most are predicting, but I'm going to be predicting a tight score as well. But I am sticking with the Lions. I know that's no surprise, but I think they match up okay. And so I'm going to go with Lions 31, Packers 28.
Oh, okay. So close to the Vikings score. I was actually going to do the same thing, but I'm going to flip it the other way. It's going to be Packers 31, Lions 30. And Lions, they're currently the best team in the NFL, but there's going to be some point where the wave's going to crest and start heading into a trough a little bit. Like they've played so great, averaging 40 points per game over the last four games, that they can't stay at the top of the wave forever. Like they're going to dip a little bit and then hopefully come back up as the playoffs near, and then they ride that crest all the way to the Super Bowl, one God willing, or however you want to look at it. They're
This
the
is a tough
Packers.
game.
It's Lambeau Field.
Yeah, tough. It's one of their toughest remaining games.
It's a good Packers team. They turned it around in a hurry. We thought they were going to go into rebuild mode. No. Like we take, 10, 12 years to rebuild. Some would argue 50, like over 60 years to rebuild. They It just takes like, oh, we have one eight, nine season. We'll be back.
I still think they're vulnerable though.
Well,
And
sure. Everybody's
and
vulnerable. The
I
Lions are
mean
vulnerable.
and based on what I've seen, even though I said the Packers, even though ahead of the season I said the Packers would be the number two team, I'm starting to lean towards Minnesota maybe being the number two team,
Oh, really?
which is a bit surprising. I think their Minnesota's defense is just terrifying. And I don't have a lot of confidence in Minnesota's quarterback, and I think the Packers are certainly more balanced, but that Minnesota defense is just terrifying to me. And while this Green Bay defense is very good, they're not as scary to me as Minnesota is. And so once they took down Minnesota's defense, it's like I can see how they can take apart almost anybody at this point. And so it's going to be tough. You're going to have to be on their, they're going to have to stay positive in the turnovers to keep them in this game. They're going to have to score often, and they're going to have to, be able to keep pace, make sure they don't get behind the sticks and get into a situation where they won't be, blitzed. And if they are, Goff needs to be what he's been all year, and be able to
Steady
maintain it.
step up. Yeah.
And, as long as they don't start like they did against Tennessee, where you're like all of a sudden just opening the damn doors. I feel like they're going to be in a good spot to either just outright have the lead and maintain it or win a shootout as well. I think both situations favor the Lions.
With both the Vikings and Cowboys this past week, both of them losing, both coming off losses to the Lions or games against the Lions. Every team that has played the Lions has lost the next week they've played. Do the Titans break that since they play New England? Would
No.
be interesting if the Titans were the one to break it, with all
No.
these other teams being better teams.
I can't imagine.
This is to me is a nonsense stat. It's just it's a coincidence. I mean, maybe the Lions beat everybody up, but even Lions didn't. You know, the Cowboys had 2 weeks after getting beaten down by the Lions. So like,
that's how much they beat them up.
Well, no, that's a fair statement too. But I don't know. I think that little thing's a coincidence.
Here's the thing: up until like 2 weeks ago, I think it was, the teams were losing two games in a row. Like after they face the Lions, up until like 2 weeks ago, and so like it's a. I do think there's something to it. I do think it's because this has happened in the past. Like I know we're talking about it being this unique thing that's happening to Lions because it is. But like there's a similar effect when teams play the Chiefs, and we've seen it. I don't know if it was last year or the year before, but we saw a similar thing where. Teams would, you know, they'd get up and get out and like sell out to try and beat the Chiefs. And then they'd have this letdown game the week after. And so I really think teams that's happening. Like the Lions, they have a target and they have a tough schedule and teams are getting up for them. And when you're the Packers and you're at home, this is one of your most important games of the year. The question is it the Lions' most important game of the year? Or is it like, you know, is it not?
I would think to them it would be, and maybe they don't talk mm-hmm. that way, but this has to be the most important game to them.
Yeah, because it's
all
at home.
These games. I mean, yeah. I guess maybe the Cowboys to them, they saw that as the most important game, but this one really feels like it.
Yeah, it's huge. It's a huge game for both sides. And again, when it comes down to the little things separating teams, as good of a coach as LaFleur is, he becomes passive when the game is on the line and Dan Campbell is not. And that has made the difference the past couple of years. The Dan Campbell's ability to try and go for the win instead of holding on for a loss or to try and avoid a loss has been the difference. And so we kind of saw it again last week. Like LaFleur had a 10-point lead with 4 minutes left in the game. And instead of going for the throat on Jacksonville, he backed off and he tried running the clock. Very traditional thing. And Jacksonville got a stop and then they went down and scored. And then all of a sudden they get the ball back and they go down and they score again. All of a sudden it's a tie game and you have to have a game winning drive to get you in field goal position to win. But like if he doesn't go passive at like, you know, between 4 and 5 minutes left in the game when they have a 2-score lead, it's not even a contest. Like, but he has that tendency. He has that tendency to kind of like back off and Dan doesn't, and that's been a huge difference in their battles the last 2 years. I would not be surprised if it's another mitigating factor in this game as well.
Now back to all the crazy stats stuff about, you know, the opposing team losing the next week, the Lions having more offensive touchdowns or just touchdowns than they have incomplete passes, and like all these crazy stats and all these games that we're seeing, like for how many, you know, this is akin to like decades of being Lions fans, and you'd wander outside at night after game night, you know, every Sunday, and there's all this light pollution and you can kind of see the moon and maybe that's Mars, you know, but now now you wander outside after a Sunday and it's the Aurora Borealis and it's clear and there's a shooting star, you know, it's bizarre to have like this crazy stuff every week. It's so you know it exists. You know, you've heard about it. Maybe you saw pictures mm-hmm. of it, right? But now, like, we're experiencing it. Experiencing, if I should use the actual word. Mm-hmm. They're experiencing it quite often. And it's something.
It's the DVOA stuff has really put me over the top. You know what I mean? Because it's just the efficiency on top of like if you can be a good team and you can put up a lot of points or you can hold teams to a lot of points, but like when you start sitting at the top of efficiency lists and EPA lists and expected points lists. And it really speaks to, you know, the level that this team is playing, and they're doing it. They're efficient on both offense and defense and special teams. And the sample size is not small anymore. It's not like, oh, this team's on a nice little run at the beginning of the season. It's like, we're in the thick of it. We're almost at the halfway point of the season. And it's like, they're tough. And it's a lot of fun to watch. I hope people are fully appreciating every minute of it. You know what I mean? Because I think it's really easy to sit back and forget about where this team was two years ago, right? Or, you know, 3 years ago was even worse, right? And so to be where they're at, winning the way that they are, it's not something that we've ever experienced. And so I hope people aren't looking at that Titans game and being like, oh, you know, I turned it off, or, you know, cause I got bored. I hope not. I hope people are just salivating over every minute and every play, because it's a heck of a lot of fun.
All right. Ratings. Latest up, that great podcast that was written this past Saturday by Mr. Mazatlan. Loves the show, loves the X's and O's of football. Found the show's the only one I found that delivers. Keep it up. Amigos from former Michigander Alan now lives retired in Mazatlan, Mexico. Go Lions. So there's some international flavor there, although he is
nice.
Originally a local. Some may wonder, how does he end up down there retired? And then part of he's like, well, is he 65 and retired, or is he like 31 and retired?
I hope he's 31.
Well, it'd be great if he is. Either way, very interesting. It's great to hear about the folks loving the show. And if you feel the same way, please leave us a review. And same thing goes with Spotify. Spotify, the review, or the, we don't see the reviews, but the high ratings keep ticking up, and that's great.
Very excited to that we keep getting people to find us. It's it's really awesome.
Yeah. All right. Do you have anything to say about Halloween? Do you have anything to say about the Michigan win? Do you have anything to say about Jameson Williams?
No, I have nothing to say about Jameson.
comes back next week, as long as there's no like league suspension put on him for, you know, the incident that happened a few weeks ago. You know,
I don't know. Like, well, we don't have all like, okay.
Yeah.
We got word of it back in mid October. Like, we kind of heard about it, but when we tried to look up, like, was he arrested? We couldn't find anything. And so we kind of figured it was just like a dead story. And so now it becomes a lawyer thing, right? Because if you talk to different lawyers, they're all saying different things. One lawyer is saying it falls under this purview, one lawyer says it doesn't, and so we're going to speculate all we want, and I don't know what the end result is going to be. It's probably just going to be like a slap on the wrist or something like that. He may or may not even receive some sort of punishment from the NFL. I don't know, but it all falls under the same umbrella of him not being conscious of the rules. That he,
the rule of law or the rules
of anything. He's like, he's very much like everything we've said about him in the past is it's holds true in this situation as well. In that he's a kid who is making mistakes, and there are mistakes that he doesn't need to be making, but
he can have long-term implications.
Yeah. And so like, you gotta. There's nothing has changed from my position standpoint. So, I don't know. I think he gets he's getting all of this attention for a couple of reasons. One of them being that no one else on the team is doing anything wrong. Right, you know what
right,
I mean?
Right. Yep.
And so he's like the only one. And so there's very much a disappointed dad tone that I am applying to this situation. So I don't know. I don't know if you want to comment on
no,
on
I don't know. I'm in agreement with you. You know, it stinks. He still has grown up to do, and he has the right to do that. Like, you know, hopefully he does that. Luckily, like the dumb things he's done really hasn't affected anyone but himself. So that's good.
Right.
You know, that's a good spin on it, I guess. Right now, this is still way off in the future. He's got the rest of this year under contract, next year under contract. Mm-hmm. Who knows what they're thinking about, whether they're going to try to re-sign him long-term after that or give him the fifth year. And they don't have to make that decision yet, but I'm sure all this stuff will go into that. And Campbell backs him. And for the simple fact is they still have him under contract for two more years. They should do that, at least publicly, even if they're giving him a hard time privately about it, which I'm guessing they're not. But
they basically said that they have to do a better job of just like trying to help him learn. And the message they keep sending to him is you can't make mistakes like that because you're in the public eye. Like it's not the same as someone else having an issue like this. You know, that's just a regular person who's, you know, getting pulled over or whatever, right? Like you're in a situation, you can't put yourself in those situations in the job that you have. Like you have to be more conscious and aware and smarter. And so he's not wrong. Like he really needs to be.
Although in fairness to Jameson Williams is that if he was somebody not in the public eye, the outcome of what happened to him when he got pulled over by the police would have been much different than what it ended up being. So
probably very likely.
Yeah. So it's not good. And we thought he was getting past all of this, you know, the gambling suspension, then all of a sudden, poof, there's the suspension for the diuretics or whatever it is. And now, hopefully there's no suspension that's going to be attached to this gun thing, but not a great thing. So that stinks about Jameson. Congratulations to your Wolverines. I think, you know, the Spartans blew it a little bit because they got tricky when they shouldn't have. It's almost like Smith was kind of thinking to himself, like, I've got to do something special because we're not good enough to beat this team, when I thought they were good enough to beat that team if they've just played everything straight up. But hey, it's a learning experience.
And then the Wolverines needed a trick play to get the lead,
to put them over. They may not have needed, like, they finally put it together, which you should be pleased about. Like, it took a long time, and they finally, like, cobbled it all together, and now they've got something that is probably workable for the rest of the year. So we'll see how they grow from that.
Yeah.
It's not a great team, but you should hope they get a couple more wins, you know.
Oh, yeah.
Get to a bowl game or whatever.
I certainly be the first
7-5 and make the 12-team playoff.
That'd be fun.
The highest rated 7-5 team ever.
I think they still have a lot of work to do. So my encouragement level is still not where it needs to be. So all of my hopes and dreams are in Detroit, not in Ann Arbor.
Right. Well, no, I know. You've definitely put them to the back burner, so these conversations are less fun.
Sorry. I apologize for that.
No, it's all right. You don't have to.
Give me a better quarterback, and I'll be more excited.
Well, that's up to Dave Port, you know.
Apparently.
You've heard about all that.
It
might be the kid from Belleville.
Who knows? Like, I don't.
You'd probably rather have a transfer. You'd probably rather have both. But, you'd want to transfer over. Is it Bryce Underwood from Belleville?
It's a big enough program. You should be able to have two competent quarterbacks available.
One would think.
You would think. And instead, you've got three quarterbacks that you've played. Yeah. One's now medically retired, right? Yeah. And so, they need some work. So I'm excited to see where it goes. But I'm not sold on them just yet. But it's almost like a rebuild, right?
Well, that's certainly where they are.
Yeah. So
All right, that's it. We've run out. I think we've hit all the topics we needed to hit. That's going to be it for us this week. Hopefully the Lions pull off a nice win in Green Bay and on Sunday. And until next time, let's go Lions.